What's up, everybody? It's Bretzky, and America is turning 250. And I can't think of a better way to celebrate that than playing on an American-owned social casino, SpinQuest.com. With all of your favorite games, live craps, bubble craps, live blackjack, there's no better place to play for free and win real cash prizes. SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
A snarl, and they're upon him. An ancient forest spirit at his heels. The only escape is in the Toyota BZ Woodland. John Cho stars in Camping. Test drive Toyota's new all-electric family today. Toyota, let's go places.
Forget whatever plans you have this weekend because you're staying at home and playing on SpinQuest. And there's never been a better time to sign up than right now. New users get $30 coin packs for just $10. All the table games you love, with hundreds of slot games and real cash prizes. That's at SpinQuest.com. SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
This is The Big Breakdown, a long look back at some of the biggest stories we're covering for you at the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today. This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
Lindsay Clancy doesn't have to prove she was out of her mind. That isn't a technicality, and it isn't a defense lawyer giving you a talking point. In Massachusetts, when a defendant raises lack of criminal responsibility, the burden doesn't move to her. It stays with the Commonwealth. Prosecutors have to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that she was criminally responsible on the day her three children died. Not that she did it. Nobody is arguing that. Her own attorney told the court the circumstances of what happened aren't in dispute. The state has to prove her mind was working well enough to be held to account for it, and it has to prove that to the same standard it would need for a fingerprint or a confession. 12 women and 6 men are seated in Plymouth Superior Court. Judge William Sullivan has told them this could run 2 months. So when Plymouth County Assistant District Attorney Shannon Buckingham stood up to give the state's opening statement, she wasn't decorating a story the jury already half believed. She was starting from behind, carrying a burden most people follow. Most people that are following this trial don't know that she's actually carrying. 3 weeks before her children died, Lindsay Clancy drove herself to a psychiatric hospital on New Year's Eve and checked herself in. According to the malpractice complaint later filed against her providers, she was not seen by a doctor for 3 days. She was discharged after 5 with no indication from the hospital that she was a danger to anyone. And what she built all of it on was a clock. A phone call that lasted 14 seconds is going to do the enormous amount of work in this case that the prosecution needs it to do to prove she's this evil person who is plotting. Or will it? Or will that 14-second call really not do a whole hell of a lot? There's an appointment on Lindsay Clancy's calendar the day before her children died that never came up in the state's opening at all. She sat with her psychiatrist on January 23rd of 2023, according to the civil litigation. The note from that visit records no change in her mood and quotes her saying she was desperate for something that would work quickly to get her out of the state that she was in. Desperate. 24 hours out. The state's opening doesn't go anywhere near it because they can't go anywhere near it. Because it would completely destroy their whole theory. There's something about what a not guilty verdict actually does here that the jury may not fully understand yet. Something the Commonwealth has every reason to leave alone. This is where the state plants its flag.
Go to 3V and he's going to stop just at CVS on the way there. That's when the clock starts, ladies and gentlemen. The defendant knows that Patrick has to stop at CVS, go to 3V. She knows that it's about 5 miles from their house to get to the restaurant. She knows approximately how much time she has for him to go there and come back.
That's it. That's the story of premeditation. She knew roughly how long a CVS run takes. Buckingham told the jury the clock started when Patrick Clancy walked out the door for takeout 5 miles to the restaurant. A stop on the way for a children's laxative the pediatrician had recommended that morning for a 5-year-old with a stomachache. The state's argument is that a woman who could estimate that errand was a woman in full possession of herself. The claim underneath it is also worth saying plainly, because the state never says it plainly. The claim is that organization proves sanity, that a mind coming apart can't also keep time. That isn't what the clinical literature says. In fact, it's actually close to the reverse. Postpartum psychosis shows up in roughly 1 in 2 births per thousand. The depressive subtype is the most common of the three, about 41% of the cases in the research. It's also the most dangerous. Clinical sources put the rate of harm to a child in that subtype near 4.5%. Command hallucinations are a documented feature of the illness, not a story assembled afterwards by a defense team. So are delusions of control, the experience of acting under an outside force. One study of postpartum bipolar psychiatric patients found symptoms of that kind in 62% of them. None of that describes somebody who can't function. It describes somebody whose reality has been rewritten while the machinery keeps running on schedule. Which brings us back to the phone call. Patrick called from CVS. She missed it. She called back and they talked for 14 seconds. Buckingham told the jury that nothing she said in that call concerned him. 14 seconds, that's the Commonwealth's evidence of a sound mind. It's also about how long it takes to tell your husband you're fine, when 4 months of professionals have been telling him you're improving. Here's the sentence the whole case is being built on.
Not a woman in the throes of psychosis on January 24th, 2023. This was a woman who acted intentionally, rationally, and swiftly to accomplish a very specific goal, to kill.
Not a woman in the throes of psychosis, intentionally, rationally, and swiftly. The state needs the jury to hear those phrases as the opposite of insanity. In Massachusetts, they aren't. The standard comes out of a 1967 decision, Commonwealth versus McHole, which adopted the modal penal code language. A person is not criminally responsible if, as a result of mental disease or defect, they lack substantial capacity to do one of two things: either appreciate the criminality or wrongfulness of their conduct, or conform their conduct to the requirements of the law. Either, not both. That one word is the case. A juror can sit through every hour of the state's evidence and believe all of it. They can conclude that Lindsay Clancy understood exactly what she was doing and understood that it was wrong. They would still be required to find her not criminally responsible if the Commonwealth can't prove beyond a reasonable doubt that she had the capacity to stop. A voice issuing commands doesn't really go to whether you know right from wrong. It goes to whether you can conform your conduct. That's the second door. And the state has to close both of them beyond a reasonable doubt. There's a case that gets reached for here, and it usually gets used backwards. Andrea Yates was a registered nurse in 2021. She killed her 5 children in the family home. They called police and told them, she called police and told them what she'd done. Organized from beginning to end. Her first jury convicted her. That conviction was overturned after a prosecution expert admitted he had given false testimony. And on retrial, a second jury found her not guilty by reason of insanity. She was committed to a state psychiatric hospital, and she has been in one ever since, waiving her release hearings year after year. Now, the part that matters in Plymouth County, Texas asks a single question, which is whether the defendant knew the conduct was wrong. That is the narrower, harder question. And Yates cleared it anyway. Massachusetts gives Lindsay Clancy a second door A Texas never opened for Andrea Yates. This is where the state goes after her medical record. Take a look.
Oh, to deal with her mental health issues in the worst way. She chose to manipulate her providers, seek out the quick and easy fix when she was feeling depressed and anxious. And when she didn't get what she expected, she chose an alternate route. She sought a different doctor. She changed medications after days. She disengaged from treatment when she didn't like the plan. After only 4 months in treatment, she made a choice, a deliberate and intentional decision that she did not want to try anymore.
She manipulated her providers. She sought a different doctor. She changed her medications after days. She disengaged from treatment when she didn't like the plan. Every one of those describes something that actually happened, and every one of them shows up in the civil complaints as a failure by somebody other than Lindsay Clancy. She sought a different doctor. According to the lawsuits filed against her providers, she went to Women and Infants Hospital in Rhode Island and was told that their day program wasn't appropriate for her. A doctor there agreed she should come off an antipsychotic she had been prescribed. The hospital reached out to a nurse at South Shore Health who had also been prescribing for her, and the complaint alleges that outreach was actually never returned. She changed medications after days. Her attorney says she was prescribed 13 different psychiatric medications between October of 2022 and January 23, among them Klonopin, Valium, Prozac, Zoloft, and Ativan. Her husband told police she was taking as many as 4 a day and that she took them exactly as prescribed. The complaints describe polypharmacy across multiple prescribers, meaning no single doctor held the full picture of what she was on. She disengaged from treatment. On New Year's Eve of 2022, she checked herself into McLean Hospital, and the lawsuit alleges she wasn't seen by a doctor for 3 days. She asked to be discharged in time for her daughter's 5th birthday. Prosecutors have pointed out that the hospital released her without indicating she was a danger to anyone. The complaint says the hallucinations returned within a week. She wanted a quick and easy fix. Patrick Clancy went to her doctors himself and told them they were turning her into a zombie. He has since filed his own complaint for malpractice and wrongful death, arguing his children might still be alive if their mother had received adequate care. This is the father of Cora Dawson and Callan. He was called as the prosecution's first witness. The state does have an answer to all this, and it deserves to be taken seriously because it is the strongest thing that they had in that fairly weak opening argument. Buckingham told the jury Lindsay Clancy withheld information from her husband and from her doctors, and that the symptoms she reported didn't match how she was actually living. You can't sue a physician for missing what a patient hides. Except, underreporting isn't a wrinkle in postpartum illness. It's one of the defining features. And it's been studied for decades. A review from Massachusetts General Center for Women's Mental Health, synthesizing 32 systematic reviews, identified fear of having a child removed by protective services as a primary reason women don't disclose. In one community survey of postpartum women, 1 in 5 who had symptoms told no provider at all, and roughly half reported at least one barrier that made asking for help extremely difficult or impossible. A mother who is terrified of losing her children does not hand a clinician a complete inventory. Every practice in this country knows that. It is the entire reason routine screenings exist. Building a first-degree murder prosecution on the premise that she should have self-reported perfectly asks a jury to hold a patient to a standard the profession built safeguards around precisely because patients can't meet it. And she wasn't hiding alone. Her husband was in those rooms asking, which brings it back to that last appointment. Every provider in this chain had 4 months of chances, and the final one came 24 hours before 3 children died. A patient told her psychiatrist she was desperate for something that would work fast. The note records no change in her mood. She went home desperate the day before. That appointment doesn't appear anywhere in the state's opening statement, and the prosecutor said the quiet part out loud.
Men, this is not a public debate about women's mental health and how the medical system treats women. This case is about this defendant, Lindsay Clancy.
That the Commonwealth telling 12 women in advance not to follow a threat, not to weigh it, reject it, just to agree up front that it isn't in the room. That's not part of this whole case. I mean, it's the crux of the whole case. It is in the room. It is the entire defense. Kevin Reddington stood up after her and told the same jury this case is exactly about women's health and postpartum psychosis. He has put it more bluntly in the past, saying society fails miserably at treating women with postpartum depression and postpartum psychosis. And that approach is Medicaid. A minute before that line, Buckingham said something else, and she moved right past it. She told the jury Lindsay Clancy had a means and access to mental health care that most people don't. She's right about that. Labor and delivery nurse at Massachusetts General, one of the most respected psychiatric hospitals in the country, a short drive up the road, insurance, a husband who kept showing up and asking for help on her behalf. She had every advantage the system says you're supposed to have, and the system still sent her home with 13 prescriptions and a diagnosis of generalized anxiety disorder. A psychiatrist who evaluated her at length afterward concluded she had bipolar disorder with psychosis of postpartum onset. Those findings are quoted in the civil litigation, along with her note that antidepressants can produce mania and mood instability in someone with bipolar illness. She was on Prozac. She was on Zoloft. The prosecutor offered her access to care as proof of guilt. It is the most damning sentence anybody said about the medical system that morning. And it came from the Commonwealth's table without even realizing what they're saying. Near the end of that opening, Buckingham read the jury the actual test, whether a person can appreciate the wrongfulness or criminality of the conduct and whether they can control their actions. She said both parts out loud correctly. The arguments she actually made were these: the clock, the 14 seconds, the CVS timing, the overachiever, the strict schedules, the food planned carefully, the sleep schedule on to the minute. Every one of them goes to whether she knew what she was doing. Almost nothing in that hour goes to whether she could stop. The Commonwealth has to prove both beyond a reasonable doubt to 12 women who spent jury selection answering written questions about whether anyone in their family has been diagnosed with postpartum depression or bipolar disorder. There's one more thing that the jury will be instructed on, and it's a piece the public almost never gets right. A verdict of not guilty by reason or lack of criminal responsibility does not open a door. In Massachusetts, it sends her to a secure psychiatric facility with periodic hearings to determine whether she could ever be safely released. Lindsay Clancy is already held at Tewksbury State Hospital. She's paralyzed from the waist down. She comes to court in a wheelchair. Nobody is walking out of anything. This case never should have gone to a jury. The medical record laid out in those civil complaints a very real story. And the right venue for it is a licensing board and a courtroom where the providers sit at the defense table. Instead of the Commonwealth going and spending 2 months trying to convince 12 women that a mother who begged for help for 4 straight months was running a con. I don't think they get there. I think this one hangs. Buckingham did one thing in that opening that was exactly right, and it's the thing the rest of the hour walked away from. She started with the children. Cora had just turned 5. She loved sparkly dresses and bows in her hair. She loved princesses, and she spent the start of preschool trying to convince her teachers. Her name was Sophia, after the character. Dawson was 3, all trucks and noise with a raspy little voice. Callan was 8 months old, and in the prosecutor's own words, always smiling. They are the reason there is a courtroom that we're talking about at all right now. whatever those 18 people decide and however long it takes them, Corin, Dawson, and Callan were failed by every adult in every institution that was supposed to see this coming. Some of those failures will be argued in front of a jury. Most of them never will be. Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. Next, we're getting into the defense's opening statements. We'll watch some of that from the courtroom as well. Press subscribe so you don't miss it. It's coming up right here on the channel. We'll continue our conversation in the comments. Until then, I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast. This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
The Commonwealth's case against Lindsay Clancy needs her to be a liar. Not once, not twice, three times. She lied about being sick. She told her husband and her doctors that she was struggling. But the prosecution says she was performing. She withheld information, exaggerating symptoms, manipulating providers. Everything she reported was a show. She faked S attempt, a woman who went out a second story window on a frozen ground and is now paralyzed from the waist down, did it on purpose, but didn't mean it. The injuries were superficial. That is the world the prosecution is living in. They even called her injury superficial. The woman's paralyzed from the waist down. How do you walk into a courtroom and say they're superficial injuries and expect me to take one iota of anything else you have to say with any grain of seriousness? Jesus. The prosecutor out of the gate is already a bumbling idiot. Oh, and she made up hearing the voices, all made up. The hallucinations didn't exist until her lawyer brought in a psychologist into the hospital room, and the psychologist handed her the script. That's the Commonwealth's filings, that all that mental health mumbo-jumbo, it's just witchery. It ain't real. It's Massachusetts. Why don't they just burn her at the stake, you know? She's a witch! See, they've had a lot of progress there in terms of understanding mental health in the last 200-300 years. Three separate fabrication charges, and every one of them has to hold for the prosecution's theory to work. If the jury believes she was actually sick, the withholding argument collapses. If they believe the attempt was real, the cold and calculating theory also collapses. If they believe the voices were there before the lawyer, the coaching accusation also collapses. Kevin Reddington's defense opening at Plymouth Superior Court went after all three. He didn't argue them in theory. He named the witnesses, read from medical records, and put photographs in front of that jury. And then the prosecution's own first witness took the stand and made one of those three arguments actually for him.
Hold Patrick in the presence of her mother.
Start that again.
She told them that she was suicidal. She told them that she had suicidal ideation. And in December, to his and her ever dying regret, told Patrick in the presence of her mother.
Reddington, finish that sentence. He told the jury that in December 2022, to his and her ever dying regret, Lindsay Clancy told her husband in the presence of her mother that she was having thoughts of hurting the children. She disclosed the worst thing a mother can say out loud. That's not withholding. That's actually the opposite of withholding. And it happened roughly a month before her children died in a room with two other people in it. Then Patrick Clancy took the stand. He was called by the prosecution. And before the lunch break, he had backed up everything Reddington claimed. He testified about 2 months before the children died. His wife told him she was having intrusive thoughts about them. He told the jury he was not afraid for their safety because she showed no intention of acting. She was frightened of her own thoughts, which is the textbook presentation of an intrusive thought and the precise opposite of a plan. He testified he never saw her harm them. He testified she told him she was having thoughts of taking her own life around December of 2022. He testified he grew alarmed when her prescriptions reached 10 in just over 2 months. He pushed for an appointment in person because, in his words, there was a disconnect. The telehealth visits were short and they lacked a lot of attention. He testified that her big spiral started around the time she was put on Seroquel, an antipsychotic. Buckingham's opening said Clancy withheld information from her husband and from her doctors. Buckingham's first witness said his wife told the doctors, and that he went to the appointments himself and asked whether she was over-medicated. Those two accounts cannot both be true. Only one of them was given under oath. Reddington described what the household looked like by then. He told the jury she was walking around like a zombie, rocking on the sofa, crying, banging her head into the pillow. Her parents drove up from Connecticut and moved into the house to help with the children. That was around Thanksgiving at 22, 2 months before her children died. This family had a grandmother and grandfather living in the house because the mother could not manage alone, and nobody with a medical license had figured out why. Reddington spent a long stretch of his opening reading her prescription chart to the jury, name by name, date by date. Sertaline from Jennifer Tufts in September. Lorazepam from Tufts. Hydroxine. More lorazepam, all from Tufts. Then trazodone and fluoxetine from a second prescriber at South Shore. Then quantipine and diazepam from a third. A nurse practitioner named Rebecca Gioletta. 13 medications across multiple providers between October and January, and not one of them holding the full picture of what she was on. He also stated a rule flatly. If the patient is bipolar, you do not put them on an antidepressant. He named the drug class selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors, SSRIs, and told the jury it messes with the brain. The first entry on her chart was Sertaline, which is Zoloft. A psychiatrist who later evaluated her at length concluded she had bipolar disorder with psychosis of postpartum onset. Those findings are quoted in the civil litigation along with a note that antidepressants can trigger mania and mood instability in a bipolar patient. She was never diagnosed as bipolar while she was being treated. She was diagnosed with generalized anxiety disorder by apparently blind and deaf physicians. Because what she was describing was not generalized anxiety disorder. She called a hotline in December. She was evaluated by a crisis team. On New Year's Eve, she and Patrick got in the car and drove to McLean Hospital, and she checked herself into a locked ward. The malpractice complaint says she was not seen by a doctor for 3 days. She was discharged after 5, and the hospital cleared her. No indication she was a danger to anyone. 3 weeks later, her children were dead. That's the first lie the jury has been sold. Here's a second.
In the course of the fake suicide speculation by the police, you'll see the evidence that she hung on the window ledge. And like Spider-Man, I guess, slid down the wall of the house. You're going to hear evidence that she flung and threw herself out the window, striking her head on the ground, full ground, causing what's known as a Jefferson fracture of her neck. She shattered, exploded her thoracic spine. Shattered her cervical spine, the first disc. Broke every rib.
Or, as the prosecution calls it, boo-boos. At Lindsay Clancy's arraignment in February 23, Assistant District Attorney Jennifer Sprague told the court that she lowered herself out of the window and dropped down, and that she had not taken into account that the ground was frozen. That is the Commonwealth putting on the record that the fall was staged. Buckingham did not repeat it in her opening at trial. She concealed the attempt, or conceded rather, the attempt was real. She told the jury what the defendant did not anticipate. What the defendant could not anticipate was that she would not be able to complete the act, almost. She survived. Buckingham told the jury Lindsay Clancy suffered spinal injuries and superficial injuries to both her wrists and her neck. Superficial. That word is doing quiet work in an opening statement where every other sentence was chosen on purpose. It's the last surviving piece of an argument the state stopped making out loud, sitting there to be picked back up in closing if they need it. Superficial. Reddington clearly expects exactly that. It is why he spent time in his opening reading a medical record that does not sound like a fake anything or a superficial anything. Jefferson fracture is a burst fracture of the atlas, the C1 vertebra. The ring of bone at the very top of the spine that the skull sits on, it was described by the British neurosurgeon Sir Geoffrey Jefferson in 1920. It happens when sudden axial load drives down through the top of the skull and the ring of C1 splits apart under the force. I don't like to think about this either. The most frequent cause in the medical literature is diving headfirst into shallow water. It accounts for between 2 and 13% of all those type of spine fractures. That's what happens when someone goes out a window headfirst and hits frozen ground. And the rest of what Reddington read to the jury, a shattered thoracic spine, a shattered cervical spine, every rib broken, and a cut to her own throat made standing in front of a full-length mirror impossible. She is paralyzed. She comes to court in a wheelchair, accompanied by two nurses from the state hospital where she's held. She'll be held in that wheelchair for the rest of her life. Reddington also showed the jury photographs from the hospital, the wrists, the neck, the bedroom floor, the blood. He stood there and put the pictures up while the word superficial was still in the air from that morning. That's the second lie the jury has to believe, that there is more. And it's the most specific accusation in the case. Take a look.
But you're going to hear evidence from a woman who works in Brigham and Women's Hospital. Saw Lindsay as soon as she came out of her coma. She is a woman that works with the religious services in that hospital. And the first thing that Lindsay wanted to know is, where's my family? And then she told her about what happened and told her about the command voices. And this is well before she ever met me or Paul Zeitzel.
That accusation is in writing. At the arraignment, Sprague told the court that Lindsay Clancy called her husband before her hospital bed using the cell phone of Dr. Paul Zeitzel, the forensic psychologist the defense had brought in. Sprague put in the filing that Patrick told police his wife had never mentioned hearing voices before and had never used the word psychosis with him. And Sprague wrote that the first time Clancy used that word was when she was with the doctor hired by the defense counsel using his phone. That is the Commonwealth saying in a court document that the lawyer's expert may have handed her the illness. After all this, here, you have this. Reddington told the jury his answer is a witness. He said a woman who works in religious services at Brigham and Women's Hospital saw Lindsay Clancy as soon as she came out of that coma. He said the first thing Clancy asked about was her family. And then she described the voices to that hospital staffer unprompted with no lawyer and no psychologist anywhere in the building. Looks like that argument doesn't work now, does it? Before Zeitzel, before Reddington, before anyone the state could accuse of coaching her. Both sides have listed clinicians from Brigham and Women's Hospital as potential witnesses, so that gets tested in front of the jury rather than argued at them. But if the hospital chaplain confirms what Reddington told the jury, the coaching theory is dead. A woman waking up from a coma with a shattered spine, describing voices to a stranger in a hospital gown, is not performing for a jury she does not yet know exists. 3 fabrication charges, a husband who testified she told him a fracture list that does not fake. A witness who heard the voices before the lawyer arrived. And then there's one more thing, and it's a detail that makes faking any of it pretty much structurally impossible.
When she's in the hospital, they said to her, you want to, what do you call it, a DNR? Do not resuscitate her. Absolutely. Did not want any DNR. Didn't want to be resuscitated. Wanted a day. To this day, wants to die.
A person constructing an alibi does not refuse to be resuscitated. Reddington told the jury that when Lindsay Clancy was in the hospital, she was offered a do not resuscitate order. She signed it. She did not want to be brought back. He told the jury she wanted to die then, and in his words, to this day, she wants to die now. That is a detail that makes every other fabrication charge structurally impossible, and it forces a jury to hold all of it in their heads at the same time. She faked the attempt, but she refused resuscitation. She staged the fall, but she shattered her own spine doing it. She performed the illness, but she told her husband, her doctors, her crisis team, and a hospital chaplain. She coached the hallucinations with her lawyer, but she described them to a stranger before her lawyer was even there. All of those things have to be true simultaneously for the state's theory to work. If any one of them cracks, the whole frame comes apart, and the burden to hold it together belongs to the Commonwealth, not to her. I do not think we have 12 women sitting through 2 months of this and coming back unanimous that she was faking all of it. The medical report, the civil complaints, the husband's own testimony from the prosecution's witness stand, and the physical evidence of what she did to herself are all going to sit in that deliberation room. The state has to overcome every piece of it beyond a reasonable doubt. I still think it hangs. Kevin Reddington finishes opening the way good lawyers finish. He stopped arguing and told the jury something human. Lindsay Clancy was a labor and delivery nurse at Massachusetts General. She spent her working life catching other people's babies. Reddington told the jury that Cora was named after the very first baby Lindsay ever delivered as a nurse. She carried that name home from work, and gave it to her own daughter. Cora had just turned 5. Dawson was 3. Callan was 8 months old. Whatever those 18 people decide, and however long it takes, Cora and Dawson and Callan were failed by every adult in every institution that had a chance to see this coming. The jury is going to spend 2 months deciding whether their mother is the last person it happened to, or the one person who should have been stopped. The answer to that question is sitting in the medical record that 5 different providers wrote, and none of them read together. We'll be following this for you every day, giving you recaps. Give us your thoughts in the comments section on Substack and YouTube, and be sure to press subscribe. If you want full trial audio of it every single day, be sure to subscribe to our podcast. You can find the link in the description. We'd love for you to join us on Substack, on Apple Podcasts, on Spotify, wherever you get podcasts. Get access to all of our content there. Until next time, I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers Podcast.
Forget whatever plans you have this weekend, because you're staying at home and playing on SpinQuest. And there's never been a better time to sign up than right now. New users get $30 coin packs for just $10. All the table games you love, with hundreds of slot games and real cash prizes. That's at SpinQuest.com. SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Hanging out at the pool is great. Relaxing and playing Vegas-style games on my phone at the same time. Drink in one hand and a blackjack in the other. It's all at SpinQuest. Over 1,000 games, including your favorite slots and table games. Be cool with this summer special. New players get $30 coin packs for $10 at SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Hanging out at the pool is great. Relaxing and playing Vegas-style games on my phone at the same time. Drink in one hand and a blackjack in the other. It's all at SpinQuest. Over 1,000 games, including your favorite slots and table games. Be cool with this summer special. New players get $30 coin packs for 10 at SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Happy birthday, America. It's time to celebrate and play your favorite Las Vegas casino games by American-owned SpinQuest.com. What's better than fireworks and American pie? Hitting a blackjack in the palm of your hand, and you won't lose your fingers. Over 1,000 games, including slots and live dealers, and $30 coin packs are on sale for 10. SpinQuest.com. Buy American players for American players.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
What's going on, everyone? It's Bluff here, and you know what's more American than America's 250th birthday? Supporting American-owned companies like SpinQuest, America's number one social casino with over 1,000 games like Live Dealer Blackjack and Craps. They're offering new users a $30 coin package for just $10. Go to SpinQuest.com and sign up today.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
What's going on, everyone? It's Bluff here, and you know what's more American than America's 250th birthday? Supporting American-owned companies like SpinQuest, America's number one social casino with over 1,000 games like Live Dealer Blackjack and Craps. They're offering new users a $30 coin package for just $10. Go to SpinQuest.com and sign up today.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Ugh, I have had no luck lately. Wait, lady luck?
Bretsky, I got you. I've had so much luck on SpinQuest.com. They have all of my favorite games, slot games, live blackjack, craps, and bubble craps. You can even get a $30 coin pack for just 10 bucks.
10 bucks for 30? I'm headed over to SpinQuest.com right now.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.